Welcome to Highway Diary. I'm your host, Eric Hollerbach. With me today, Richard Dubas and Paul Joseph, joint podcast. I accidentally hit the wrong button when we started this podcast, so I missed the intro, but there you go. Enjoy episode 173, Richard Dubas and Paul Joseph. What are y'all's things that you're working on personally? Both of you are getting better every time you go up. But what do you think, what have you noticed in your own game with stand-up that, like, you're improving on, and what's still something that you're working on? Start with you, Paul.
All right, so the rate, I feel like the rate at which I'm coming up with material that does well is picking up. So I do like that. Something I really want to work on are more introductions. The whole Black Paul thing is, like, it's funny, but eventually 7 years are going to pass, and if I'm still doing that, I got a huge problem on my hands. Mm. So just working on intros, and also just finding stuff beyond all the known book shows and all the open mics. I'd like to try and branch out and just kind of be like an MC for other stuff. And, you know, just anything outside of what most comics do, and, you know, see how well I do with that, or at least learn something from it at the very least. So, yeah.
Richard, what about you? What are you good at now? What do you need to work on?
Well, I need to get Southland Comedy be bigger and better. But I don't think I have bad sets as much as I just have bad jokes. Like, I'm learning how to pick up to change an audience attitude. Like, for instance, a 12-mile limit, I did a joke about being cheap, and I've gotten the dirtiest looks I've ever gotten, you know? And, like, I think they thought, like, I abused my girlfriend or something, and then I hit them with the cat joke and the dick pic joke, and immediately they switched attitude. You know, they were with me, like, okay, this guy is a comedian, not just a jerk. And then they found out after the show I was a jerk.
The information you present and the order that you present it in has a lot to do with how the audience perceives you.
And I think that is, and also too, just reading a crowd. Like, I should know that 12-mile limit, they don't really like feminine jokes. Like, the cheap joke is about how my girlfriend wants to go eat out, but I don't want to spend money. Mm-hmm. So I'm like, we're going to eat this ramen noodle in the back and be happy. And they kind of don't like it there, and I should have beforehand realized that and went with in another direction. So just reading the audience is something I'm getting better at. Mm-hmm. But also too, that's because I have more material to pull from. Like, my goal is I have a great 10, do a great 15, do a great 20 in increments until I'm like Eric and do an hour special.
Well, but the compromise between for not wanting to go out to eat and eating out would just be to eat her out, and I think that's a fair compromise. It's enjoyable. Do you not like eating?
Well, I mean, I do, but I mean, I'm hungry, man. I got the ramen in the back,
there's
man.
There's protein in there. And you need to stay hydrated.
And that's what everyone can have for lunch. What is she gonna eat? Your Dangle Daniel? And then it's just fucking 69.
Have you ever? Okay, so do you think you've eaten pussy like at the same time as every meal? Have you had it around breakfast time, lunch time, and dinner time? Also snack time between lunch and dinner.
Like, what's the time
and
of
dessert
the day?
After dinner? Yeah, just like based on the times of day, which is like, oh, I could like, oh, you know, but and also it kind of takes up the meal because you're like, you can't just have cereal and then go right to eating out.
That's right. You need to use the list.
Especially if you're lactose intolerant, that's just a disaster.
You don't want to get little cereal shrapnel in your fucking coochie.
Can you imagine getting that Cap'n Crunch stuff where it just sticks to the roof of her vagina? That'd be awful.
It'll be a Fire fucking. Sharp. It'll Fire turn sharp. Into a pearl in their clam. Anyway.
You can't do both. So one or the other. And a lot of times most times I chose eating out the lovely lady.
Is that where you got that little mustache with the fucking groove in it for the pussy juice to shoot through? The Flavor Saver?
No, the Flavor Saver. It's just to... Because otherwise, without it, it looks like I'm a teenager who's trying to grow a mustache. So the soul patch is like, no, I can grow facial hair. But Nah, I needed to get rid of all that huge beard just because, girls were not responsive to that. Like, there's a point where a bunch of facial hair is good. Like, your beard is, like, kept and stuff. And mine was, like...
Unruly.
Do you need a dollar for the bus? Yeah. I didn't stand on...
Great way to get a dollar.
I didn't stand on street corners too long. I don't need money that desperately. Richard, I have two jobs.
What's your grooming strategy here? Just, like, all-American, just shave the beard?
Just shave it off, man. Just shave it off. I actually have this now, like, it's just, like, one little razor blade. It's really nice. But, like, my facial hair comes in, like, a Brillo pad, so I can't do the normal ones.
Are you mixed?
No, I'm as white as can be.
You just need, like, a straight
razor? I have a little
razor.
Bit of Jewish
look,
in me,
look
though.
Look back in history. Oh, that explains it.
Just a little bit.
Yeah.
That's why Eric and I are friends.
See, yeah, Eric won't come out the closet. He won't come out the monotheistic closet and just admit he's Jewish.
The Jew door?
The Jew door.
No, it's Jersey. Jersey, they kind of adapted that. Because they thought that would make them wealthy.
I don't know why I have to explain this on every one of my podcasts. But
that is
like
weird. A lot of
raised Catholic.
That
and
is
I'm
a real
super not Jewish at all. But I'm
because the Jerseyans.
But
they
here's
captured
the real
culture.
The truth is, there were a lot of Italian entertainers who actually switched their names to Jewish, Jewy sounding names.
Oh, for the business?
Yeah, there's you know the guy Pat Cooper? There's a comic named Pat Cooper. His real name is Pasquale Caputo, and he changed it to, Pat Cooper. And he got those thick-rimmed glasses. Everybody thought he was Jewish. Until
nice
he did nothing but launch into a spaghetti material. His spaghetti on top of meatball. It was like, okay. He's really shucking and jiving. How are they calling it in Italian? Shucking and jiving. I don't know.
Yeah, but good about it. I ran by this place today in Algiers. It's called Gambino's Bakery. I was like, what the fuck are they? I bet they're cooking the books next to a little bread. What's going on? Gambino Bakery? Do you know Gambino
it's
crime
very,
family?
It's very childish.
I just wondering if you like go in there one time and you have you get, like, some sesame seed bagels and stuff, and then all of a sudden some guy comes in all stabbed up, and they're like, someone used a towel.
Oh, you have to use all the... Why'd you use all the aprons?
You're using all the aprons on this guy? It's $40 of fucking aprons. This schmuck here bleeding
out. It's $40 an apron, man. Gambino's is not very good with their money, man.
It's not fair how
just get a white t-shirt, tie it around.
Let me tell you, it's not fair how much black people love mob movies and Italians just hate black people.
What?
Yes.
Don't
be offended. You're apparently... Oh, wait, no, you are Italian. That's right, you're not Jewish. Fuck, I messed that up.
He's New Jersey.
No, but... It's for real, like, just the Italian, they do not deal with the, what are they called? The Murignanes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, you know.
That part in Godfather, is, like, the most racist line you'll ever hear in
a
movie.
Oh, they're savages anyway. Let them
lose this.
Those
niggas want to do heroin, let them do it. Let them
lose
their souls.
They're animals
like,
anyway. Let them lose
fuck?
Their souls.
You can't write that in a movie these days.
Oh, you can, especially if you're like Martin Scorsese. He just doesn't give a fuck.
Quentin Tarantino.
It's not because he doesn't give a fuck. I think he definitely likes to, not in
a sinister
way.
Django.
But, well, it was, but it was effective. It definitely evokes an emotion. I think Martin Scorsese just uses it because it's like, yeah, that's how my mom and dad talk.
Yeah, I think in Django, like when you're talking about the slave era, if they're like, friendly, kind gentleman, would you please pick this cotton?
Involuntary worker.
It's pretty
that's like that Ben
disrespectful.
Carson. Ben Carson, they were immigrants. They had dreams. And then we crushed them down here.
I don't know if you're laughing out of agreement with him or no.
I really don't know who Ben Carson is, actually.
He's like a surgeon, but he went on this long rant on how... the slaves were immigrants.
He's one of the greatest neurosurgeons in the world.
Oh.
Then he tried running for the.
He ran for Republican.
Yeah.
Okay,
and
yes, I remember this
stupid
guy.
Stupid as shit.
And he's a surgeon, but he's ahead of the housing.
It's like stick to surgery, brain boy.
Fuck your degrees. But Eric, let me ask you a question. Mm. Okay, since you're heading out, going to greener pastures.
Oh sure. Yeah, August 1st, I'm gonna be in LA.
What are you?
I didn't. It's just.
What do you what do you think the comedy community needs to do to become stronger?
In New Orleans?
In New Orleans.
Oh, well, I've had private conversations with some people in regards to this.
You're banning from...
I would say don't ban people. I would say instead of, like, spend energy on shunning people, I think you should spend energy on booking more widely, more openly. There's always, an underbelly in the comedy scene of people who do it multiple times a week and don't get booked on book shows. I think if you give those people a spot in a certain show, if you have a weekly show, like once every 4 months or once every 2 months,
yeah,
kind of keeps the undergrowth of the scene churn.
Because it's very cliquish right now.
I think, yeah, and if you happen to run a show and you have like 10 people that you book from and it's always the same six usually, there's not going to, if the same audience, if someone wants to come to your show every week, they're going to hear the same material every week. So
I
want to
isolate
ridiculous.
You more from the comedy community. Who are you talking about specifically?
Oh.
You don't have to do it. Yeah, don't do it. Nah, I'm just messing. Don't do
it. But from the booking side, it does, I will say, it, like, for myself, it sometimes is a problem. Like, immediately when I have a show, I'm thinking Carrie B, you know, Nature Boy and all them. But that's why I try to set up the open slot, which you filled in, the open slot that kind of lets a new guy run. If they do bad, I can kind of...
Yeah, I mean, I would just say if you run any open mic in any city that's, has a smaller scene.
Yeah, but do you think that's just a problem, the click problem? I mean, it's not even a problem just in New Orleans comedy. That's just a thing. And I've been to other places and I could automatically see that there were clicks in it.
Right.
But that's not even comedy. That's just everybody. If you hang around anything that's been around long enough, clicks are going to start to... If you have more than 15, 20 people, you're gonna clicks just naturally.
Yeah,
develop.
But it should be about the. It should be like about the money. Like it's like I think of
it
like
should
a
be about
team.
The money. Wait,
yeah.
Why are you?
Because it should be about.
I've
a, it's like a football team.
Free
like,
market.
Like you know, this guy, he's a dick, but damn, he can throw a football. Damn, he put seats in the stands, and that's what I kind of look at. Like, yeah, this dude is a pain, but hey, if he shows up to the show on time, does a killer set. We don't have to be friends. He got paid. I got paid.
I think it's like talent level and hard work. Like you should reward hard work, and like nepotism is not the best way to run things. If it's like, well, I got my four friends every week. I just need four spots. I'm fucking done with thinking hard about anything. Well, you're lazy. You know, like yeah. I would say, like make sure you really carefully give everyone a spot because anyone who gets a book spot, that's a boost to their ego and it could keep them pushed in the right direction. So that is kind of powerful, and use it appropriately. Use the power of booking appropriately and encourage people so that they don't like be a catcher in the rye and not like a dick.
Yeah, that's what I found that problem too, because I know sometimes when I hang out with you, Eric, I feel like I feel like the kid that's in with the guy who eats glue.
Yeah.
You know?
Oh yeah. On the outside. My fucking professor, he told me there's like a banquet coming up, and I'm gonna like read some of my work for it. And he was like, you know, people kind of think you're an outsider. You don't go to a lot of like the school functions. I was like, yeah. And he's like, you know, some of them were worried you're gonna pull a stunt or something. I'm like, pull a stunt?
That like, one, my degree's like, on the line.
There's like
you
kids
know, like,
in the audience
the school.
And stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's kids in the audience, so I can't do, like, my dirty, filthy jokes and stuff, but, you know, I can pick a piece of...
Do you think you could do controversial material without...
Cursing?
Yeah, not even that, but, you know, without, it's weird.
To me,
like that, you know, like, could you do a set on Conan without, you know, knowing who you are, could you do a set on Conan without, you know, getting, like, anything pulled? Like, you know, obviously certain people have leeway on that show, like Louis C.K. and whatnot.
Yeah.
But
I would have my...
Do you have a
good... or SNL.
Yeah, do you have... Ugh.
Yeah,
do you have
a good
5 to 6 minute set? Where it's not even... It could be, like, kind of edgy, but without... It's weird. I don't even know how to answer that, really.
I'm, in general, not interested in doing material that I can't curse or be free in. Like, the reason why I'm in love with stand-up is because It is like no holds barred. And it is like the last bastion of freedom, you know? So I'm like kind of in love with stand up, and I think it proves something very important. I don't know, even know what that means.
I want to follow up on that point, but when you said freedom, I pictured you like Braveheart, free like a phoenix rising from the ashes. But you know, I think though it is kind of nice to have a clean set, because Carrie B asked me one time. He said, if you had a TV spot worth $50,000, and they said, oh, by the way, you can't curse right before you go on stage.
Right.
You can't be dirty. Oh, okay. Can you do it? All
right. Well, I'll see you then.
And I was like,
but yeah.
On the phone.
Okay.
Okay, just text me when they start doing it.
We're trying to get in on the list.
You didn't respond.
It'll happen at 9. It'll happen at 9. It's 8:48.
I'm just being cautious.
But you know, like so that way.
I set a timer, cocksucker.
Yeah. So that, you know, and that's what I always like to have in case, because I have done a show where the Baptist people were like, "Oh, by the way, you can't curse," and I was just like, "Oh, fuck."
Yeah,
that's like, and he said that into the mic.
Well, I accidentally said ass, and apparently a girl got really pissed off and complained. I was like, ass is in the Bible.
Not the kind of asses we're talking about. Not the kind of asses we're eating, right, boys? No? Okay.
For real.
Move on.
Let's move on. Hey,
don't eat an ass. Assess an ass. Go.
But you know that's your style. I mean, I don't. Think
yeah, I that. Could rise to the occasion if it's like SNL and I want to host it and I want to do a stand up spot. Of course, I'm going to write something specific for that that week. Actually, probably that's how I'd do it. I'd look at the news. I'd try to be topical for something like that. But I don't know. In general, I just want to do my stand up albums how I want to do it and tour on some of that material as they come up with other material, and then make a new album that's totally different. That's kind of how I want to do it. But also, I think if I would also like to write TV shows, like for Comedy Central or for the FX network or for Netflix, where I have to use their confines, you know.
Yeah, and just be versatile in both.
Yeah.
But I mean, if somebody's booking Eric Hollerback, you know what? Like when I booked you, I had a feeling you were gonna do a mother blowjob. Like that was just, you know, it's like when you light a match, there's gonna be fire.
Right.
Like,
yeah, and recently I did the Irish House, and everybody, Red Bean was telling me,
that's what
he's
I was
like, you have to know how to do 10 minutes clean, you know. So this was your chance to do clean material. I was like, it was cleaner. Don't ask me
the
these
other
questions.
Thing. Don't you think it's actually kind of beneficial to have certain restrictions? Hold on. Where it's like, have restrictions in order to get around it. Like, think of it as a dunk contest. When, if the person just runs up to the rim and dunks it without any obstacle, it's not as cool as when, what is it?
Do a 360.
Yeah,
first.
Where you have to, or there's like obstacles, and when you have to jump over, like, you know, a cup, when you have to jump over the center for the Lakers and you don't, like, isn't it,
or a Toyota Camry,
seriously, isn't it more entertaining to have those obstacles up and still find a way around it than to just kind of go, well, yeah, I can do it because there's nothing holding me back? It's like, okay, well, yeah, of course you can say that, because, but when there's like a little bit of a challenge, it's like, oh, how is he gonna do it? How's he gonna get around this? And then you get around it.
Yeah. Well,
that's what I've had trouble, because like some of my favorite comics all time are like the Marx Brothers, Abbott Costello, Three Stooges, because they had to work super clean. But, you know, aside from just the, or, you know, even and as far back as Buster Keaton, Charlie Chaplin, they had so many restrictions on them, but they're still able to pull it off. You know, there's obviously thought into it. We weren't just more retarded back in
those
days.
It was black and white, and it was also no sound. Mm-hmm. And the camera that they were using probably broke all the fucking time.
Awful. So
and it
how
was
do you
like,
get over all those obstacles?
It's like, do this scene, and the camera's about to explode, and we don't know if the footage is going
to
be used.
To not only do it, but to make it like universally funny, which they were.
And Buster Keaton like, running down a cliff as boulders are chasing him.
Seriously, I mean, I remember just a couple years ago, or maybe just 1 year ago, when I started watching Buster Keaton, it's like, why am I, I'm laughing out loud to this stuff. So, and like I said, they had all the obstacles in front of them in the world, because I feel like there's a point where you get too free. It's like, okay, so it's beyond, I'm not allowed to say these words. It's like, who says I have to use syntax? I can, or words, why can't I just make noises? You know, and they just, that's that avant-garde.
It's too like, self-indulgent.
We don't need, like, I'm just going to come out and say, we don't need avant-garde. All that stuff is horrid.
Yeah.
It stinks.
It's like, oh, what did you, well, oh, that's experimental theater.
A steering wheel is not a wind instrument.
Like, what did you learn? What was the experiment? That you look like a fucking cunt with a cheese hat on? You dumb. And everyone's bored.
And just because you commit to it, you're trying to make, you start to slowly convince other people, oh, maybe I just don't understand it. No, you understand it. It stinks.
Well, I think, well, way back in what Red Bean, I like the thing that Red Bean told you about, you know, you build people up to that. But I think your true restriction that makes your type of comedy hard, and not to pat you on the back, is that you have to convince the church-going old lady that a blow-up sex doll of a child is funny. And that is the restriction that you have, which is kind of like our thing. Like, I have the jokes that,
if you want,
you know, I have the jokes that are family-friendly, but, you know, it's hard to, that's the true restriction, is getting, for you, is getting that person that can't handle the word cock and being like, I'm Eric Hollerback and we're best friends.
It's like a sickness, you know? Everything is just a sickness with a way to treat it, you know? Even pedophiles, if you're a pedophile, you're sick. So the apparatus to help that is a child sex doll. Your insurance will cover the cost of a child sex doll. He's going to call his insurance later. I got a problem. Blue Cross, Blue Shield. Send a sexy toddler in the mail. And everything's going to be cool. Can you imagine this guy, this poor bastard, is in his, gets a sex doll. He just starts fucking it. His wife comes in. Gary, what are you doing? He's like, oh, God damn it, Sarah. You wouldn't unplug my sleep apnea machine. I'm a sick man getting better. It's a medical device. Tate puts it in his minivan. He straps it into a child seat. He drives to the grocery store. Unhooks it. Puts it in the shopping cart. He's looking around. Rouses. Here's cantaloupe. Here's some granola bar. He just starts fingering it. Someone just drops celery. They're like, oh my God, what are you doing? He's like, I also bought Nicorette gum. This helps with the cravings. I'm a sick man getting better. He's arrogant. He's arrogant about it. Just takes the panties off. He's licking the butthole. He's at the register. Visa. Blah, 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 blah. Sucking on it like a respirator. Like an asthma inhaler. Person at the register is like, oh my God, what are you doing? He's like, would you take the batteries out of my pacemaker, would you? I'm a sick man getting better. This is a medical device. And I'm seeking treatment. Oh, blah, blah, blah. After a while, it's like, hey, Gary, the usual pub boy, cool, roast beef. But you want the roast beef nice and tight in the bun, I see. Oh, come on, who said that? What happened? Call the fire marshal. Anyway, I got banned from the hi-ho twice. I don't know why. Probably a bunch of uppity cunts over there, that's my guess. If I had to get to the bottom of it.
Continuing on with Paul Joseph, it's sort of a different, many different segments to this podcast. At first, we're just Paul Joseph.
Stark contrast. Hold on. Hey, sweetie. Hey, Byron. How's it going, man?
I'm professional.
We're doing a podcast.
Yeah. You wanna hang out, Byron? Hmm?
No, but he has to go away. This is my podcast.
Oh, okay. So then why'd you summon him if now you're going to
leave him? I summoned him to hug him / kind of touch him.
I've been summoned by the Paul Joseph. All right, I'm
gone. You're gone out of mind and heart.
I love you, Byron.
We'll see you later, Byron.
I don't know what, but there's something going on between me and Byron lately. He's so cuddly. Every time I see him, I give him a big hug.
You never noticed that? You need to, yeah. I've started getting back on board with. Oh, hold on.
Man, hugs.
Asshole with the. Well, hugs to everybody the same way. Like, I always like giving hugs, but when I first came to New Orleans.
You were stingy?
I wasn't stingy. Everybody else was. So I was like, I'm not even going to try and push through that membrane. I tried to. I kind of did when I came. I kind of had a fresh start when I came back down, you know, back in January. Everybody saw me in. But it still wasn't
quite acceptable.
Okay, well,
the audience doesn't maybe know you. So you went to Xavier. You're from Ohio.
Yeah.
You went to school in Xavier, but that's where you met all these comics, all these weird comics.
Yeah, it was down here.
And you're like,
first.
Should I be a doctor? What's going on? And then you moved back home. You were contemplating, and then you showed up here to be a comic? What?
Okay, there's a few steps missing in that. So I was still, after doing comedy during my senior year, it really fucked with my mind because I was really enjoying it. But I was continuing to lose interest in medicine. But I was afraid of finding out this, you know, like making a big mistake and just giving up on medicine. So, and this was also when I didn't get into any of the med schools I applied to. So I wanted to create an experience that would valid, you know, to either confirm or reject the idea that I wanted to do medicine. So I went to Cuba doing this through this program to do an internship somewhere in medicine. And while I was down there, I realized it was a scam. But so I didn't get that experience to decide whether I really wanted to do medicine or not. But from that, I learned to overcome getting scammed. And Jesus Christ, I fucking hate this city. I don't. But from there, I realized I could, like, overcome all sorts of horrible shit as far as being scammed in a second-world country, technically, but, you know, third world.
Right.
Just being stranded by myself. I was able, just with my mind, I was able to put myself in the right place to get through it, connect with people. And out of that, I was like, everything else has not been going according to this long plan I've had since 10 years old of being a doctor. Why the fuck not, change up the pace? And now I'm trying to be a comic. And I might not be a comic in the end. I might go back to medicine. Or I might find a completely separate thing from comedy or medicine. But either way, I knew doing comedy now was the only way I would approach those things. So I wouldn't have any other questions about...
I'll be right back.
Yeah. No worries. Eric has to, he has to take a shit or get some food. One or the other. Food's going in or food's going out. It's just me right now. But, I guess I don't need him to help goad me along. I can still talk about.
You want a Gator ball, Paul Joseph?
I don't need, I'm full. I'm full and I've been drinking on the way over. So
you were on a date.
It wasn't really a...
Well, like, it was a date.
It was a date, but we didn't call it that. We were just old friends from a high school youth program meeting up. But it was really enjoyable, and she said, hopefully we'll meet up again to message her. So that's very perspective, and it felt good coming from that. And the first thing I see is a text from you not being here on time for the podcast. I told you I was on a date, and you're like,
because
I hope it was entirely disrespectful.
I hope she shows
your tits. I was like, this is not... where that date
was
going.
Well, first of all, I said to make up for the fact that you were late today, you could send me a tit pic if in the future she sends a tit pic. You don't know anything about contracts.
Like, when people say tit pic, do they really mean tits pic, or do they just, like, a picture of just one tit?
Well, whatever's in the picture. If she sends you her ass, I'd prefer send me that.
Yeah, but I prefer two tits, because if you only send one, I'm kind of skeptical. Is there a cancer you haven't told me about yet? So just send me both. Hey, Xander.
I don't like to feel left out in the process, though. And in high school, that's exactly what happened. They made me stand out and feel left out because they called me Black Paul. I was the only Paul at high school. There's no reason to call me that. They just wanted to say Black Paul. And I told them, like, could you come up with something less offensive? And they're just like, about sensitive, Paul.
I was like, that's really still racist, you know? And this next joke's racist. Because I'm mixed, people get my race mixed up all the time. I've been called so many different ethnicities, nationalities, political endorsements, like ISIS. That's not true. I look like an ISIS recruiter for the Western Hemisphere, like trying to get people on board.
Well, I'm like quite literally the halfway point between black and white, because my mom was really white and my dad was really black.
Well, I thought you knew Spanish. Aren't you Cuban? Why do you know Spanish?
No, I just look Cuban. The Spanish helps. Unless I, of course, talk to a Cuban, then I know I'm fucking American as shit.
Is it true that you learned Spanish just for a girl?
Yeah. And then when I got around to, like, when I knew enough Spanish to talk to her and mustered up the courage to ask her out, she told me she doesn't date black people, so.
Well, did she put it like that, or was it just like...
She said she didn't date black people.
In Spanish? That's what translates?
Well, yeah, she couldn't speak English.
Was it you people?
I didn't want to go... I didn't want to do the whole bit. She did say, I don't date, like, you people. And I was like, but how can you be in America, not speak English, and I'm the you people? You're in my country. And that's when I started believing Trump's ideology. But, there have definitely been experiences in my life where it's like, I kind of get where some of that racist shit comes from. It's usually because you didn't get fucked by a certain ethnicity, so you're like, well, fuck all of them. What do they know? I'll fuck someone eventually. I'll fuck a Spanish speaker eventually.
Someone eventually.
I'll fuck a Spanish speaker eventually.
You could get a Cuban broad. What are you talking about?
Well, there was no doubt I could. It's not
so
about...
So you went on that internship,
it's not
that
about,
fake medical scam internship.
It's not about confidence. There's prostitutes down there I could have picked up easily with no consequences. I just didn't feel like it. Besides my dick, I also really need my ego stroked really well. She needs to twirl on top of my ego.
They were too much like, wham, bam, thank you, man?
No, not even that. I could almost handle that, but there's always this hint of, please get me out of, let's marry so you can get me the hell out of Cuba, or can we fuck so I can eat? And I'm like, nah, I just paid for meals because I didn't want it to be a bartering thing, fucking for food.
Whatever works, bro. You gotta use whatever game. What is sexuality?
That's just... What is sexuality? Is shelter. Holding food over people. Sexuality
That's
is the need
the
for...
animal kingdom, bro.
Sexuality is the need for shelter. Yeah, but at the end of the day, you can go a whole year without fucking I have. But you can't go a year without eating. And I didn't feel like holding that over them. Some other pink-skinned European guy in his 60s probably did, but I just didn't want to, personally.
So I went to this, on this podcast, I went to this interesting event one time where I went to the Red Roof Inn near the airport with my correspondent, Mohammed, and we went to see a foreign bride's dating service.
Oh, okay.
They fly you out to the Ukraine and speed date, you know what
you
I
mean? You
did
that.
I didn't. I went to a seminar about it.
Oh, okay.
At a motel by the airport. But what I thought was fascinating about the talk is, like, you know, that's what every single broad there is like, I would like a nice house. I would like food to eat every night.
Yeah.
But you know what I mean? Yeah, tremendous dating advantage.
Yeah, but here's the other thing. It's not perfect. Let's say all I want for you to have is to have everything you want. So I want you to just have a... Even if you get her through, I can feed you and give you a house to live in. And only if you get married to me. Let's say I support that
idea.
I still wouldn't advise you to do that because as soon as they come over to... This is what happened to every person I've ever heard marrying somebody out of Cuba and bringing them back to their country. As soon as they get back to that, get back to the promised land, the new country, they just dump whoever they're married to for someone more attractive with more money, which is easy, especially if you're a Cuban girl. Guys, I don't know, but Cuban girls can easily find someone better than you and richer than you. So, and they just have to wait. They just have to wait and fuck you long enough until they find someone else to just whisk them away, which happens.
So you think like
it only happens 99% of the time.
Well,
so I don't want to influence
like,
your decision.
In Los Angeles, I sold some screenplays. You know, I got a hot broad.
You bring this up a lot on your podcast.
Let's just say I was 35 and she was 18. You know,
okay.
For legal sake. So I bring her back. You think the second she's like, oh, this young actor, wow, he's got money. And then she would marry him. And
yeah.
then I would cut him to pieces. And then I would send her back to the Ukraine.
So you're not on top.
What?
You're not on top.
It's all about a prenup. Anyway, let's talk about something
it's true. No, you definitely prenup, but...
Oh, finally!
Just make sure... No, I got this. But I haven't smoked today. And I won't smoke today. Oh, you meant you didn't mean drugs. You meant my facial hair. Yeah, I did a little bit of both. But hey, how's everything going? Good to see you, man. Nah, cause it's like ultimately everybody wants you want to have a steady relationship. You, like the prenup is just to go. Well, if you're gonna try and fuck me over, guess again. But ultimately, it's like that still stems from well. I'm upset because I really want a relationship that works. So
yeah.
Don't get a bride out of Cuba or Ukraine.
Why not?
Or
man?
Someone
get
who's Cuban Ukrainian. That's way worse.
Do you
way
think
more
just
deceptive.
Get someone who you really love and don't get a prenup?
Well, just don't get brides from former communist blocs. Like, that's maybe
they
that'll
a work
help
ethic.
You. They don't have a work ethic. They just fuck to survive. It's
they
not...
didn't, were raised on fucking MTV watching girls cry over getting the wrong colored Lexus for their 16th birthday.
No, they just see people fainting in streets from starvation. It's way worse.
Yeah, so...
At least you don't get to bitch about seeing people faint from starvation.
Buy low, sell high. Buy low, sell high. Why would
you just
get...
Those just felt like words. I don't necessarily understand.
Why
buy
would you
low,
get?
High.
Okay, why
so
would
how
you?
Are you selling?
I'm
these
trying to
after?
Explain it. Shut the fuck up.
How are you going to tell your guests to shut the fuck up on your own podcast?
Because when they're
the
asking
guest
me
is
question,
always right.
No, sometimes a guest is a cunt, and I cut that shit down because they will fucking yap too much.
All right, what do you want to say?
Why would you get an American broad who has been raised with commercialism propaganda? I'm talking about commercials, you know, MTV. They have really high expectations. You have a girl who was a pig farmer in the Ukraine. She kept on having to, oh, this pig has the fever. And she would just feed pigs for 14 hours every day in the slaughter factory. She would cut the pig's throat. You know what I mean? She would chop it into meat in the slaughterhouse. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Every day she'd wake up at 6 a.m., feed the pigs.
She's definitely you know more I mean? Humble and she's more grounded.
You know, you think she would rob your bank account for fucking Gucci bullshit? No, she would
no,
be
I
like,
would never educate her on the banking systems over here. She
exactly,
couldn't do it.
You
yeah.
got to keep her in the dark.
But that's a really
in
funny
your basement.
See, you just made up a scenario, but you don't know how accurate you are in that. I remember I was in the back of a truck and with a couple people and we were driving to another city in Cuba. And as we were driving by, I saw this woman. She had to be a 10. And she was just sitting on a pile of trash waiting for her bus to come. And she's just out in the sun. She doesn't even have an umbrella, which most Cubans have. She didn't even have that. And she was just sitting on a pile of trash waiting for a shitty, crowded bus. I was like, she seems very humble. Like, yeah, there's something about that. Now, there is a certain amount of... You know, no matter how much you try and hermetically sear yourself from the rest of the world, shit does seep in. So there is a little bit of commercialism seeping in general. They don't understand it to the extent we do, mm-hmm. just growing up. But yeah, there's just some people whose self-worth isn't so based on, you know, media, you know, commercialism and stuff. They're just, some people are just out there in the hot sun on a pile of rotting gunk waiting
yeah.
for a shitty
so
bus.
If you're like,
I think she has character is what I'm saying.
Hey, wife, here's a 1992 Ford Taurus.
Hey, don't worry.
Thank you.
It's not. It doesn't even smell bad. Try it out. It's got seatbelts. You
oh
don't have
God.
Those down there, do you?
This is probably the... If this car was in my country, it'd be the best car in the country.
Instead of like, oh, yeah, you got me a 2016 purple Corvette. I wanted one that was green. You're the worst piece of shit husband in the world.
You really have a
everything
strong
is
view of. I know, but the thing is, those women do exist out there. You just kind of come off pretty strong. Your personality is very strong.
Yeah,
and even though you're
getting broken down by the last two girlfriends I had cheated on me, so you know, I'm a broken
I know, but
person.
Just make sure you don't sound like some of those bitter women that start telling girls about how men ain't shit because the two or three guys they messed around with didn't turn out right. For different reasons, usually for both of their faults. Sometimes the guy's a bigger asshole, but you were also, that kind of meant you were kind of looking for that stuff. I'm not convinced that you accidentally come across an asshole. There's something that, there are qualities that belong in every asshole that you just happen to find attractive, but you didn't see the asshole part until it came out in the open. So, there, like, I mean, I've had good, I've had positive experiences with, well, for, let's say maybe two girls tops. That gives me hope, despite all the shitty relationships and the other shitty girl. Like, there's both exist. You, on the other hand, sound like you've just dealt with nothing but assholes and stuff. But maybe it's weird. It takes some looking. It also takes some lying. If you lie about how, like, you're not that crazy, like, do you ever, you should just, like, I want you to do this at a date next time. Oh, that was a good point. Oh. Do that? For,
do that,
like, a normal girl who's talking about a show.
I think you think I'm a monster. I get on dates, I kiss their butt. I go, oh, wow,
well,
I really believe in your dreams. And all that shit. And then they're like, oh, well, you're just a pushover. You're a little monkey. I can make them do anything. This isn't fun for me anymore. Bye. You know what I mean?
That's true. I'm struggling with that as well, honestly.
There is such, like, a balance between, like, being, like, the gopher for the girl, being, like, trying to appease her and make her feel good and all this stuff, and then not lowering your status in their mind to someone who's just a coddler.
It's so easy to be lonely, but at the same time, you fucking hate it. So you're just desperate to... You're desperate for anything that will make you not lonely. I mean, I'm saying you, but I could be talking in the mirror.
Right.
So I'm willing to make certain concessions because please, God, help me just for tonight. Get me through this one night. Everybody talks about, you know, you have to fake it till you make it as far as being assertive and stuff. But then I feel like even they can see through that and they're just like, they just are waiting. They're just counting the seconds until you revert back to who you really are, which is lonely and desperate. So I don't know.
Wow, you're sounding like such a downer. Wow, are you one of those bitter people who blah, blah, blah?
Yeah. Yeah, because I don't know. I just grown up with the weird standard. My parents stayed together through everything. And when I say everything, it wasn't because they did shit to each other and then they forgave each other. They were just solid. They worked together. Never cheated. Nothing like that. When they got upset with each other, they made up and just pushed on. So I just grew up seeing that. I saw people getting over obstacles. I saw people making compromises out of care and affection for the other person. But as soon as I tried practicing that on people I dated, then they just took advantage, you know. They just kind of took advantage of that. So that's what puts the cynicism on it. Put some cynicism on it. So it's really hard.
You try to be like a cuddly bear, like your dad was to your mom after 30 years of marriage, and then they're like, "What the fuck is this?"
Exactly.
You're
so it's like,
"Are you my mommy?"
Because being that way, clearly it worked.
Right.
And it wasn't neither of my parents were pushovers. But they were just inspired to be that way towards each other. And it's like, why, if I feel that way, quit looking at her ass. She has a date.
How dare you?
When passes by. But when you see it work, it's like, it just, if that's kind of within you to be that way, you want to be that way, but other girls just interpret that as, oh, well, I can just take advantage of that. Or, oh, they don't see it as, I should be grateful for that. They just see it as, oh, maybe I just deserve that.
Right.
No, you don't.
Oh, I should get a ride to work every day. That's normal.
Is that what you did before? There's a lot of stuff. Oh, that's... You make me want to hate women again.
What? You're,
like, listening to...
Don't say
no, that. Listening to your stories makes me hate women the same way watching Color Purple made me hate black men. Like, it's... There is that level of evil out there. It's just like, oh, fuck you. Just... You're all... It just makes you have that statement in your head that just you people, all of you.
That's why that Cuban girl didn't want to date you. I don't date you people.
Oh no, she was Mexican.
Oh okay.
Cubans don't see race the same way as we. They just are so busy fucking each other. They just don't see race.
Cubans just blow so many loads a week that it's like gender.
You can.
What?
You're
race? Who?
You're being facetious, but that is so fucking true. Like everybody just has that face, like they just got done fucking 5 minutes ago.
Yeah.
It's a little cheeky, and it's like, well, and I asked somebody like, is it, why do you guys fuck all the time? Like I feel like you guys fuck all the time. He's like, well, we do. I was like, why? It's like, well, we don't have a lot of money, so we can't always go out to eat dinner. We can't go to a movie theater. We can't go out to a club. And you know what? The one thing that's free, it's fuck. And it's weird because you think of all, like, when you come, and then you come back here.
Yeah.
And
everyone's single and just jerking off to weird draft porn.
Beyond that, but just,
oh, that's just me.
Race. Well, that too, but I was going to go more about the political route of, like, just race relations. At a societal level, and then also on the personal level, like as far as, like, can you date someone that's not your race? Can they really sympathize you and understand you as a person when they have such different backgrounds as you? And then that goes for relationships. That might go for friendships. Anything. And I've read a lot of literature that just poses all these amazing theories and different ways of looking at how we're all really related deep down. And it took, like, it took editing and then publishing and then marketing that message out so that people will read it and discussing it on TV shows just to pump out that same message that, you know, it's like, and at the same time, all that was happening, there's a black Cuban fucking a white Cuban. It's like, they solved the problem so long ago. They just solved the problem. Just fuck, what are you talking? Yeah. We don't have to philosophize. What do you mean, who's the fucking Dostoevsky of the Zulus? Like, did the Zulu tribe ever have someone the equivalent of Dostoevsky? And then somebody said, well, Dostoevsky is the Dostoevsky of the Zulus. Because he belongs to everybody. He doesn't belong just to a race, is it? They figured that already in Cuba. Just they don't have to go that far. They just accept everybody because they fuck them all. Some underage, but they're not without their problems. They should stick to people above 18 and stop doing it out of a need for food and shelter. But at the same time, they figured that problem out. So yeah.
So they just take shelter in each other's buttholes and pussies and.
Mostly put, they're not that Catholic country where it's like, I save it for marriage. They don't save shit for shit. You'd be lucky to find a girl who's 20 who doesn't have a kid down there. It was very rare. Like, if you see that, then look over your shoulder. There might be a leprechaun fucking a Sasquatch at that very moment. That's
Make
how
a
rare
wish.
It is.
Make a wish if you see...
Make a wish.
A 20-year-old without a kid, because...
Shoot a pot of gold all over your face.
They don't have a lot of, like, healthcare for tube tying, it seems.
No. But here's the other thing. So when people are having kids at a very young age down there, it's the mother that sticks around to take care of the grandchild, you know? But it's not like here, where when that happens, it fucks everything up. Down there, that's just how it goes. Everybody takes care of all the mothers take care of the grandchild while the mother works. And that's just how it's passed down. Kind of the way we have it set up where the parent takes care of the child. and the grandparent can kind of just does what they do. And then because if we shift either of those models, it fucks things up. So when one has it too young, all of a sudden this mother's now a grandmother, but she still has a job. So on top of her job, she has to support not only her kid but her grandkid. Similarly, over there, when you have a kid so fucking young, and if you're supposed to be the one taking care of it, it's you have now this fucking 19-year-old is balancing work and a child, and like not just work to help supplement, no, work to fucking feed themselves and the child, like, and just hold on to whatever.
And that's
they
what
got,
you took away from this trip. Over
that's
Cuba,
not all I took away, but that's one of the things I noticed down
what
there.
What else there's happened when you were down there?
Like,
how'd you realize it was a scam and not, like, what were you supposed to be doing?
I was supposed to be doing a medical internship.
What does that mean?
It was supposed to... So, I couldn't do one in a hospital. It's illegal down there for foreigners to do it without the proper paperwork. And I just didn't go through a program that could have done it. It would have been way more expensive. And also, I had to go to, like, maybe... There's a fly. I had to have to go to med school down there. I didn't want to do that yet. So I did this program, and I was like, well, the next thing that was available was physical therapy. I was like, okay, that's cool. I'll be dealing with anatomy, physiology, and just Spanish vocabulary, you know, Spanish medical vocabulary. Show up, and it's a massage parlor.
Physical therapy? Well, you know.
What it was happened? A massage parlor. I learned massage. And I didn't even get... internship hours. I got maybe 6 hours a week, and I was like, I paid too much money to do this. I'd like to just get a refund, and I'm gonna leave, you know. And then they just said, we're not doing that, you signed this contract. I was like, I signed a contract for this internship, you gave me this other thing. And so then they just kind of disappeared. So in lieu of an internship, I just spent the next 2 months traveling around the eastern portion of Cuba mostly. Because the people at the massage parlor weren't in on the scam. They were victims of it too. And once they realized what happened, when I talked to them, they actually took a liking to me and kind of took me under their wings. So I learned massage. But I also spent a lot, but most of the time was just spent talking and getting to know them. And they took me under their wing, like I said. There'd be times where they fed me, they showed me around the city. They even took me to the beach where they have a little stand set up to get massages on the beach. So I just hang out there most days, and you know, it's like you just swim in the water a bit, in the blue waters a bit, you get cheap food, you get drunk on the job. It was great. They don't have the same rules down there. You can get drunk. You can drink while you're working. It's encouraged, actually.
Like, even a doctor going into surgery could be like, hey, can I get two, like, Bloody Marys? And they'd be like, all right.
If someone brings a bottle to work, it's going to be empty within 2 to 3 hours. Like, everybody does a they might do shot. They don't, you know, they don't get fucked up. But
what if someone
it's a very communal thing.
What if someone brings a hard dick? Is the 20-year-old who's not pregnant yet going to get pregnant?
You have to repeat that. I don't. You really switched gears there. You went from going 60 miles an hour to just putting it in reverse. What would you say?
You said, what if someone brought a hard dick? Would the 20-year-old get pregnant if she wasn't already? Because you don't see that. It was just a weird joke. Anyway, Paul Joseph.
That was just a weird question, but go on.
How good did your Spanish get down there? Was it perfect by the end?
Not. It wasn't perfect, but it was so much easier because. Their Spanish is unlike any other. They've been isolated for so long that whatever accent they had just, you know, it gets distilled. And it's like, and it's in the Caribbean, so imagine, and it's kind of like the racial makeup's really similar to other islands around there. So imagine listening to Patois in like Jamaica, where it's like kind of English, but it's so far, it's really far removed from, English as we know it.
Yeah.
So imagine that kind of, but in Spanish. A language you don't know 100% anyway. So it's really fucking tough. It took me maybe a month before I understood what people were saying. But I got around to understanding shit. I mean, eventually it had to be to the level where I talked to the authorities when I needed to renew my visa or to testify about being scammed down there, because they got the...
You went to court?
I didn't go to court, but I was... And I'll show you... Like, eventually I'll show you this video I have of... I was put in a car and taken to this, police base that was outside the city. Well, you know, it's like, I would have been... If they didn't give me a ride back, I would have just been lost, and you knew I wouldn't be here on the podcast. It was weird, but they wanted me to, provide testimony as to what happened to me, who did it. Because they got... Because if all the stuff was legal, they should have received... But the company, the scam, circumvented a lot of their laws. So they missed out on a good amount, a decent amount of money. So they wanted to punish those people, which they did. And yada, yada, yada. The director and one of the my representative in Cuba, who was part of the scam, are in Cuba jail.
You went down there, you're like, what the fuck? I'm not supposed to be jerking off these old men at this massage parlor.
It was after about 2 to 3 weeks where I realized I shouldn't be doing this. This doesn't feel like physical therapy.
Right.
It doesn't feel wrong, but it's not physical therapy.
Nice,
but it was as far from physical therapy. And no one carries all the stress in their dick, you know? Not that many people.
Was that going on in the massage parlor?
No, I mean, I ask because it's always a joke, but they're like, but they told me, like, you have no idea how many times people ask for that. And there was one time where I was, kind of shadowing. I was, I'd gotten done, they were instructing me how to do this and that kind of massage and showing me. And I was sitting outside in the lobby when I was done with my little training thing. And a customer went in, and he goes behind the curtain to get his massage. It's going on for about a half hour. All of a sudden, one of the masseuses comes over and is like, hey, check this out. Brings me back there, and they open the curtain, and the other masseuse is giving a massage, but the dude who was like a European kept trying to take her hand and put it near his dick and stuff. And and he has his eyes closed. He's just trying to do it.
A strong move.
he's just face down and reaching for the masseuse's hand, trying to make her put it by his ass/dick tucked under and whatever. And she kept having to I was like, he's really trying hard. Also, I'm looking at this European guy's bare ass, but because of what he was doing, it made up for it. So I'm still straight, very, very straight.
So you were just watching it all go down, this is the hazard of.
For about 3 minutes, but eventually, you can't watch it for too long or I started giggling. It was just really, silly. We all enjoyed it afterwards. Because I'd also get a bunch of complimentary massages just because I was, learning from them and stuff. One of the last ones, I was pretending to try and make their hand reach through. It was great. Although one of the MILFs actually wanted me to... mess with her. She was 40 years old, very attractive. I regret not doing anything with her.
Continuing on. Wow.
All right. I promise I won't be distracted. I won't be giving shout-outs like the Black Eye Witness and on news. I'm going to be focusing solely on you, microphone and audience.
Thank you. Yeah. Now, it is difficult when you do shit in New Orleans because just a parade of fucking drunk, alcoholic, deadbeat parents go by.
Bike riders.
And neon bikes. There's this group of fucking neon bike riders that go through. They're so hammered. One of them fell off their bike as they were parking.
And she was trapped under there. It filled my heart with gladness.
Trapped under a row of bikes as she fell off her bike drunk. And these are all parents. And then they just what she want? What, twerk, 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 twerk. You know what I mean? And they're 39 and 48.
It was worse than that. It was bounce music.
Yeah, and they just won't fucking get their shit together. So that's what living in New Orleans is like. There's these bike groups. They go around. Anyway.
Oh, you didn't hear. Or maybe you did. There is an... Okay, so you know those... No, not the bicycles, but the motorcycles. You know those gangs that go around I-10 and just go... They're just these really loud, obnoxious dudes on the motorcycles and the four-wheelers and shit.
Yeah, the dirt bikes and four-wheelers.
Yeah, so by Franklin, these guys were trying to get up onto 610 West,
and he does a wheelie as he's going up the ramp. Now he's done going up the ramp, but as he gets to the top, there's a car accident, so the cars are just jammed at the front, so he can't merge into the rest of 610. And he can't do anything else. He can't get around it. So he just hits them because he was popping a wheelie the entire time up the ramp. He didn't have enough time to react to do anything like that. He's only on one wheel. The bike plows into them. He flies off the motorcycle and goes over 610, lands on the ground.
Good. I hate.
Yeah, I wasn't upset. I was like, that's cool that that can happen. And it's like, it's a weird balance, because you know how when you do, it's like you don't want to see people doing dangerous shit, because it's like you could kill yourself, but just to prove that you're, but to validate your fear of them doing something dangerous, you almost want them to, you straddle that line between I'm afraid you'll do it and I just want you to kill yourself so I can make a point.
And also, and all your friends, it's like, stop doing this bullshit. I saw it during Mardi Gras. There were two four-wheelers that were doing wheelies on St. Bernard. They crash into each other. I'm driving passengers with Uber. Yeah. I drive by, some guy just knocked out against a tree. And there's every instance where his 18-wheeler can go crash into someone's fucking car, kill a car full of people. Yeah. They're not skilled enough, and they're not doing it in a controlled environment.
It's beyond
enough.
Skilled. They don't have the judgment to be handling.
You don't
hundreds,
merge
if not thousands of
when
pounds
the when of metal. The when the street sign says yield as you're merging onto a major highway, you have to yield. If you're on one wheel doing a fucking wheelie at 50 miles an hour, you can't do anything. And then there's even a special circumstance. There's people pulled over from a fender bender, and then you just crash into some guy getting his insurance card, and then you go off a bridge. Fuck you, man. I hate that shit.
I don't want them to die, but because, I mean, no matter how many of them die, there's still, like, stupidity doesn't just stop with that generation. It's going to, there's more people.
And even if they don't
but
die.
But it's like, it's what happens. It's just, I'm like, I'm not upset. I'm not happy that it happened, but it's like, well, shit. That's, it's just kind of cool to, like, visualize in my head, because, you know, you just visualize horrible shit, but just for the entertainment value. You don't necessarily want it to come to fruition in real, in reality, but it's like, wow, it is kind of cool to just hit a car and just see that one guy just see a man flying like you're not supposed to.
Right.
And then it's like that he does like the little Wile E. Coyote thing where he looks down under him. He's like, uh-oh, wait, I don't fly. But instead of crashing and having birds flying around your head, you're just dead.
I say that all the time, you know, when you're on those rised highways, like you can just go through someone's fucking Christmas dinner, you know? Like, your motorcycle can just shoot into a warehouse and someone who's tailoring a jacket for someone's wedding just gets a motorcycle through their fucking ceiling. It's bullshit. They gotta stop. The police
these are very specific scenarios.
In New Orleans are so fucking lazy. They're not proactive. They're incredibly incompetent, and they're lazy as fuck. If you have a dog and you're a gutter punk, you can beg for money all day. Because
have you ever been satisfied with any law enforcement anywhere, though? Where you're like, you know, this is the one. This is good.
I'll tell you, Mount Olive, New Jersey, those fuckers will pull you over if you have a taillight out, man. Proactive. Proactive. They're dicks.
But don't you... Yeah, exactly. So that's what you're still upset with them?
But I'll tell you this. They would not let anyone do dirt bikes with fucking wheelies. I see those guys pass cops all the time. They don't do anything.
Yeah.
I also see so many people.
No, because they're also involved in gangs. They're not just rascally high schoolers. They're people with horrible, evil connections too.
There's so many people also without a license plate and without insurance, and they're driving these ghost cars around too. Obviously, you got to pull those people over.
You're making
man.
It sound more like political and like it almost sounds like a movie. He's a ghost car. Nah, it's just a really irresponsible person.
Someone who...
Well, let's just call them a person.
They stole a car. They took the license plate out because otherwise it'll be declared stolen. And they put some bullshit-looking dealer plate on that's like America's Dealers. And then some bunk-ass temporary tag that's like a paper towel. No, just drive around like that.
My
like
car got totaled by someone without insurance.
Yeah, man. Shit sucks.
That, and it was happened on Valentine's Day. Yeah. And we were just watching a movie. And I hear what sounds like a garbage truck accidentally dropping like a huge garbage bin. On like, instead of just laying it back down, it just like accidentally drops it. Huge crash. I'm like, what? That never heard anything like that before. Like, maybe it was a car accident. I remember going down the steps, and I just had this weird, rotten feeling inside. I was like, oh no, what if it's my car? Sure enough, look out the window, it's my fucking car was the first to get hit. But then there were three cars in front of me that also got totaled. They hit a fucking parallel parked car in a well-lit area.
So did you see the people in the car?
Yeah, they couldn't get away. Their car was beyond fucked up.
Well, did they run away?
No, they were like dazed and drunk, I think. And I was like getting mad because I was getting mad like you get mad at a man. But then I realized there was a woman. Like imagine a Shep, but like smaller and who does like track and field.
So that's what like kind of burly. Like.
Not burly. Just looks like a dude, but more in like who does track and field. She had like a more of a field than track body. Yeah,
these are not relevant details. So some person None, without
neither
insurance.
Is your guy about a guy getting hit on like a family getting hit on a Christmas dinner by someone on I-10. But go ahead, check me.
She didn't have insurance is the relevant detail. And the relevant detail as far as you don't know who... When you're doing some weird wheelie over a fucking bridge, you're not thinking, oh, well, I'm passing 100 innocent people in their little homes with their little businesses. I'm just... You know what I mean? The problem is also I like when people like that die because they've scared hundreds and hundreds of people. If you just do a wheelie next to a car as you're driving, you're scaring the shit out of those people because they know that you're on a tightrope right now.
I love this concern for the emotional well-being of people. It's coming from the same mouth that does the fucking a kid doll joke.
Look, we're just talking.
That's uncomfortable as shit for most people. It's not for me because that happened to me. No. But it's just funny, and I know you're joking, but when people don't quite know, they just think you're a monster. So to hear your concern about, hey, you're making people nervous around you, man. Hey, buddy.
Yeah.
Hey, guy, don't do that.
Yeah, but that's in a highway. I'm just telling jokes with a microphone. You know, no one's in danger. Physically.
I know.
And I don't care about trigger words. I only
know... Or trigger... Or trigger atrocities like child molestation. That's not a trigger word. Everybody knows what eating out a 4-year-old boy toy, you know, doll. That's a more than just trigger words. That's a whole trigger image.
Trigger basket.
Trigger image.
I think we're misrepresenting my material, but anyway.
You're a trigger lover. Go on.
So are you on this kind of thing right now where you're like, I'm going to be an artist for my life and kind of struggling with that? And are your parents cool with your decision right now to not be a doctor? They're in Ohio. You could have picked Phoenix, Arizona, Las Vegas, Los Angeles.
We can narrow that pool down a bit. My dad passed away back in 2012. My mom was actually really... She didn't like it. She thought this was just me reacting negatively to not getting accepted to med schools. And I thought about that too. Like, what if it's just me reacting to that? But honestly, I think I just didn't get accepted because I just didn't put nearly the amount of effort I would have had I really wanted to do medicine. I was just... And I can work hard, but it has to be something that matters to me. And it just was... mattering less and less to me, so I was putting less and less effort into it. You know, surprise, surprise, I get rejected. But then I explained to her, you know, I used to think doing medicine was permanent, but now it's changed big time. What's to say in the future I don't change again and go back into medicine? or maybe I do really well at comedy, or maybe there's a third option that I turn to, but I won't know. But the best way I can get to the whatever point that is by doing comedy right now, so I never have to question, could I have done it, should I have done it, all that stuff. So that's why I'm doing comedy now, because I don't know what there is. But right now, all I know is I enjoy doing this. I feel like I'm growing a lot. And also, I've smoked and drank more than I ever have, and it's been wonderful. So that's why I'm doing comedy now.
So do you feel like you're a conservative little kid, and you're coming out of your shell?
I didn't really judge anybody for doing it. I really just didn't have time nor money to devote to doing all that stuff on such a regular basis. As I'm, you know, when you've got other shit to worry about as far as college and, you know, you don't really have a job. Or if you have a little job, it's, you know, you can only do limited amount of thing with that money you get. So just so much weed and so much alcohol was not in that budget. So there's very few things I'll do on a moral basis as much as me being cheap. Like, that's the only reason I'm not an alcoholic, is just because I can't afford to be. I got other shit I want to do. I can't balance both.
I remember probably I first met you at the La Nuit. Yeah. Do you remember those days with Jackie on Saturday and Friday nights?
Because one of the first times I met you, I think maybe the first time I met you, I just asked you if you knew Kenny Harrison. You, like everybody else, you were the first person to, like, react badly to hearing his name. So I was like, oh, what does that mean? So, but you were the first. And you told me, you just told me the truth about him, really. So thank you.
Kenny. Yeah, he got to a point where every time I saw him, it was normally at Siberia, he's like, buy me a beer, buy me a beer, buy me a beer, buy me a beer, please buy me a beer. I'm like, you're a homeless person. What's happening? Do you have a fucking spongy?
He's not a homeless person, because a real homeless person would have said God bless you after you said no.
Yeah, so it's
he doesn't even have that right.
It's just, he just is such a moochy bastard and not a good comic, so I didn't like hanging out with him.
I'm not gonna be that guy that goes, you can't even call himself a comic. There's some people who just aren't as funny, but they're still a comic. He was not a comic. He just something else really. He was just this guy just rambling on stage, and it was uncomfortable.
And so many times I would be like, okay, man, you gotta write some jokes. You know, you gotta actually
write something.
Material.
Just write something.
But he would always argue with me. When I would say write material, he would argue with me, and he would say, like, you know, I got a lot of things going on. I have, like, four different bitches I'm seeing. I got this and that. Everything was an excuse. First of all, he had no bitches. He was just lazy and didn't want to fucking write and was too stupid. So, I mean, you know what I mean?
He is a cocktail of failure.
Yeah. So then he would just...
Of just no desire to... And failure, not because his stuff isn't good, but... He doesn't even care. He's just like one of the, you know, those kids that are in college and they go to a real expensive college, but they don't do anything. They're just like a homeless person on a university campus. Why the fuck are you doing this?
Yeah.
That's him.
Anyway, let's move on. Let's talk about our relationship. I remember back in those days, you know, you would come in with your little tweed sweater on, you know, you'd be reading a book between, you know, doing schoolwork.
You're really building. I definitely don't remember doing. I would never bring schoolwork to set with me. You might be mixing me up with Panit. But there was there was one time I wore my, because I usually dressed up at school, just really just because I was vain. I'm still vain. But I was then too. So I just dressed. I had a dress shirt, sweater, and even like a bow tie or a tie at the time. Like, I just like dressing well. But that's fine at school, but when you go to an open mic, you're just setting yourself up for hatred and isolation. I did that one time at 12 Mile Limit, and that's all it took. And then it was the first time I did it. Kamari told me, it was like, man, don't do that. So I was just like, okay.
You were just getting ribbed?
I wasn't even getting ribbed. I think it was just so uncomfortable for people. They just didn't want to acknowledge it. And I was new, so they're just like, what? I don't even feel comfortable joking with you about this. This is just horrendous. But Kamari stepped up and said, man, don't do that. So I was like, okay.
Look, it's Doctor Tries Too Hard. Nice outfit.
Yeah, seriously. I thought I could just get up and kind of, it's like, they don't care about my attire as long as I'm smooth and, oh, fuck, I forgot all my jokes. I forgot all my jokes that weren't even funny and I can't improv. So it's like, I wasn't any better or worse than anybody else going up, you know, that's done it as long as I have, which wasn't much at the time, but I just look and you know when you see someone dressed like that, you kind of want them to do poorly.
It's kind of like some guy on a motorcycle on a bridge. You're like, I just wanted to see
you. You don't see anybody. You don't want that guy to do a wheelie and then just win at life. You kind of want stuff to go sour for him, or you want him to go off 6'10". So yeah, but continue describing me.
That was kind of like your outfit. I was saying, it was just like you see some guy. It's like, oh, I'm doing, yeah, Beyonce song now. My life is so the shit.
I've never heard that song, bitch. But now I need to hear it so I can get whatever you just said.
Like the thing of the song is like, I'm winning so much at life.
Yeah,
I'm so fucking boss shit hog that like it's making me.
When people advertise it like that, so awesome. You kind of want them to do bad just because it's like, get off your high horse.
I just want her to like get exploded by it's a pyrotechnic like crabs in a bucket. The Super Bowl right now. Yeah. I want her to be like, oh, this is what it is. My life is so awesome.
I don't want physical harm brought to her, but I just want stuff to go well for her the way stuff went well for me when I was in Cuba. Just stuff like that, like, oh, just a series of unfortunate events.
She's like, I'm going to host a Super Bowl. Oh, no, this is a scam. I'm massaging people.
Now I'm massaging European men in Cuba. Why did I even go to Cuba? I didn't have to go there. I can do whatever I want with my money. Yeah,
I must have gotten the wrong fucking bus, not massaging.
Jesus.
All Cuban men.
All these, yeah. So I didn't, not specifically what happened to me, but it was just so many things happening at once. Like, I started, like, I don't usually believe in God until a bunch of really horrible stuff happens, because then I think that's him saying, like, well, are you going to start believing me now? Are you going to start believing me now? But instead of believing him and just accepting him in my heart, like Christians want me to do, I just persevere to spite him. Like, does that make sense? Have you ever... Like, I was like, oh, you're going to do that to me, God? Well, fuck you. I'm going to persevere and overcome all this shit. How's that? Suck my dick.
Yeah.
Which, I don't know if that's the healthy way to look about it.
No, that's why I felt like when I was...
But that's what I did.
Twice, I'm just like, oh, you think you can control me? You think you can keep me out? I'm going to do every other mic I'm allowed to, cocksucker.
I was talking about something way more spiritual, but... Yeah, no...
Everything is petty. Everything is boiled down to a petty little thing.
When's the last time
you... What else motivates?
Have you ever tried talking to Duncan one-on-one?
Yes. So anyway, that's it for Paul Joseph. What a great... yes, we're going to talk to Richard Dubas soon.
Oh, man.
And that'll be a good simul episode.
Okay, I'm sorry for striking that nerve. I don't know all the details.
It's weird because we talk, but it's just like, I just think he's closed-minded as to letting me back to perform at the High Ho, because from his perspective, Andrew gave him that mic, and Andrew banned me, so he's upholding that ban, period. I don't think Duncan's a bad person. I think he's kind of a nice person, but he just is sticking to that policy, which I think is bullshit. But we should go check the list now and close out.
Yeah. I mean, like I said, I don't know all the details, and I know, I understand why you did it. Yeah, shit's hard, but...
Bye, with Paul Joseph. Bye-bye. We're at Siberia, continuing on with Dr. Richard Dubas.
Hey, how y'all doing today?
We just heard from Paul Joseph. This is a multi-day podcast, and I have an announcement. The next podcast is going to be Mohammed from Dubai. I picked him up from the airport, and he talked about fucking Mexican girls in the face. So that's going to be the next podcast, but we're continuing on. I just want...
How am I supposed to build up to that?
I'm just doing sound.
I'm doing some room keeping right now. That's gonna be the next podcast. Mohammed fucking Mexican girls in the faces. Put on your fucking seatbelts, bitches.
No, I don't know. I have to come up with some craziness in the middle of this podcast.
Richard, you have a show on Saturday.
Yes, I got a show at Rivertown Theater. Funny story is I had a yellow light, and then he didn't give me the green light, so I made a flyer and a web page, and then he was just like, well, I guess we're doing it this Saturday.
Sometimes promotional materials can, if he's like waiting to hear back from some other promoter, and they don't got, they're like, oh, maybe we'll do Death of a Salesman. It's like, do you have a poster yet, though? Because this motherfucker just dropped a poster on me. So, Death of a Salesman can suck my dick.
Yeah. He's a good guy, though, but he recently was the best man in a gay wedding, so he was in New York for a while.
Yeah? What are you saying?
Wait,
Oh, it was hard to get a hold of.
Yeah, it was, he had a busy week, so it was a little hard. But
do you think he did gay sex?
No.
At the gay wedding?
Well, it was a lesbian wedding, so I don't know.
Want just to fit in?
That's the week after the Mexican face fucking.
Now, at a lesbian wedding, they don't separate, like, her family on one side, her family on the other. It's just, like, women on one side, dudes on the other, right?
No, I think they do it still the same way. But I think one wears a tux, and the other wears a crash.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I don't... I've been to many lesbian
weddings. It's not just two, like, white wedding dresses?
No.
Whoever wears the strap on puts the tux on, I guess.
Maybe they flip a coin. Because what if you alternate?
Good point.
I think I would alternate.
Do you think you would, if you were in a lesbian couple, would you get just the long dong and go ass to ass? Like in Requiem for a Dream?
No, I'm kind of a romantic, you know?
You just want to get fucked and then...
I want eye contact. Like, I want to gaze in missionary style. Like,
right.
Woman on woman, like Jesus and Kevin.
Right. Missionary style. Both people take turns being on top, being on bottom.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's a lot of exercise, you know? Plus, too, there's no, like, guy and woman where there's, like, a timer, you know?
Do you think when the lady, she's fucks the other girl, and then she comes from getting fucked, you know? And then it's like, your turn to put the strap on. She's like, I got a headache. It's like, bitch, you got to fuck me with this now.
Headache. There's got to be selfish loving in any.
Right.
I just nutted.
I'm done. What the fuck you mean you're done? Fuck me with this cock.
I guess it's when you just put it on the wall and you just do it yourself.
Oh, yeah. That's interesting.
While the other one watches Stephen Colbert at night.
They both have like their TV dinners in front of them. They both got two dildos on the wall and they're just backing up on it while watching Jon Stewart eating their fettuccine Alfredo. Just talking about their day.
Romance isn't lost on you, Eric.
So how was work today? Is Kathy in accounting still being a huge con? Oh, that sucks.
Jealous of Kathy.
Yeah. You like her tits better than mine. Admit it. They're just popping off the wall.
Yeah, I guess that could work. You know, everyone have their own wall colored.
Right.
Now I'm picturing like a Brady Bunch episode where they draw the line.
Like separate beds.
Yeah.
Like the Leave It to Beaver household where they had separate twin beds that the married couples didn't sleep together.
Well, you have that standard. You have that class.
Just with a giant droopy dick hanging out for the headboard of their separate twin beds.
Are we competing against the Mexican face?
Yeah, I'm trying. That was a hell of an intro for the next podcast. Yeah. Episode 174. Dude, I picked him up and he was so fired up. So he told me, he's like, look, Eric, I'm going to get, drop off at the airport at, the plane's going to drop me off at 8:15. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, suck your mother's tits, because normally I wake up at noon every day. But I woke up special just to get him from the airport. Because I knew... Aww. He already sent me a dick pic ahead of time. He sent me a dick pic of him fucking some Mexican girl in the face. I told him, jokingly. I was like, Mohammed, if you ever, get a nice titty shot or a snatch snap, if you ever get a nice little butthole picture, send it to me. So he was like, yeah, whatever, whatever. Well, he did. 2 days ago, he sent me a picture, and I'll show it to you now.
Show it to me now, right?
Of him fucking...
Well, every joke has a little bit of truth in it. I think he wanted those pictures.
Well, I got this, whether I wanted it or not. That's my friend Muhammad.
Oh, man.
Fucking some girl in the face. But, you know, and then, so I knew as soon as I picked him up...
He saved it?
I knew as soon as I picked him up that he would talk all about it. You want to see Xander? You want to see my friend Mohammed fucking some girl in the face? In Mexico. That's him in Mexico.
In Mexico?
That's the next podcast.
Yeah.
He took that picture?
Yeah.
You know, I will say,
is she a prostitute?
I don't think so.
That we should admire the lighting. There was those great lighting there.
Dude, that
you
looks
know.
Like a professional.
That was a professional.
That looks like an early
picture.
2000s, like, internet wing.
You know, she knew that picture was being... It wasn't like a quick, like, blurry...
It's a glamour shot if I ever saw one.
Yeah, the flash for sure went off.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. It was very... Also, too, he knew that the white sheets would pour it. You know, I think Muhammad's got a hidden talent besides... face fucking Mexican.
And that's the thing, he like shouldn't study architecture, he should just go full blown, like pickup artist. He can like teach Dubai guys, you know what I mean? He could wear feather boas and teach people
We're
in Dubai.
Two wild and crazy men.
Yeah, how to like pick up chicks and shit like that. What's up, Lance Arnold?
I'm just listening. I see the red light. I was
respecting.
I was gonna make a phone call in the middle of your podcast.
You motherfucker.
That made me mad.
So, how have you been doing? You had Southland Comedy for a long time.
Yeah.
Running out of La Nuit.
Yeah, and then they canceled my shows last minute when I wasn't there. And I had to find out through somebody who was going to the show. And so that's when I canceled it on them. It was, you know, I've done shows in front of one or two people. And we still did the show. You know. And the sad part was, people were telling me that people were coming up after. They were just late for the show.
Yeah.
So.
That's the worst part about running a show in New Orleans, is that the audience shows up so late.
Yeah, they do. And they expect you to hold back the show.
And it's like, yeah, this isn't like a fucking underground coke party where everyone knows that they're showing up 2 hours late. It's a comedy show.
Oh, we showed up 2 hours and you started on the third comedian? What the hell, man?
How dare, but did you know I bought a ticket? It's just like...
Yeah, and so that's why we're at Rivertown right now, and it's been kind of crazy, trying to find a new spot, you know. And then, plus two, I have tons of jobs, so I've been quitting and hiring on new jobs all the time, so...
You mean, yeah. But, the struggle's real.
But yeah, no, but it's been pretty good. It's been actually kind of nice, because it allowed me to write more, you know. Because I know you were a fan of me not telling the strip club joke.
I was just like, man, you got to change it up. After I hear the same joke, it's like, I can't watch you perform until you, switch it through. Have those in the bank and then make new stuff. You always have to have like a nice balance of old and new. Keep it going. Keep yourself honest.
That's why I think, like, the kind of, like, period of not doing Southland kind of helped me write new jokes and, you know.
Promoting is tough, too, and making sure people show up and what the order is. And then the comics will show up late and be like, yeah, but I'm going to go before that person.
Just like
the audience shows up late. And they want special shit.
And then they're like, what? Like, because, like, I would buy beer for them, and they'd be like, oh, we don't want that beer. It's like, it's free beer. Like, I know I'm out of college, but free is free.
I only drink microbrews with coriander, so.
Exactly. But you did one of my shows.
Yeah.
You have fun on it?
Oh, sure. That was probably about exactly a year ago, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah, I always loved the La Nuit. When the La Nuit back in the day was like packed out, it was a great room for stand-up because... It's just a little theater, everyone's facing the stage. You know, sometimes you have bars where people are ordering drinks to the side or over here and it's loud. But there, it's like, once you're in that room, you're just watching the show.
Yeah. There are people that are there to be there. Plus, too, you can't buy drinks there, so.
Right.
But yeah, it was a nice, it was okay. It was just expensive. Like, and I remember on the, I don't know when they ordered the Paul Con podcast, Paul and I podcast on this one, but
it's gotta be a week from today probably.
Yeah. When I said, you know, when it's about the money, and he kind of rubbed, and it's like, that's someone who's never put on a show.
It's about the talent, man.
Yeah.
It's about the fact that you have a sustainable show.
Yeah.
You can do it again.
It's the fact that I'm, when the show starts, I'm 120 under, and I need to make sure that $121 worth of people come in. So I don't just chalk another one up for experience.
Oh, that's a tough business, man.
Yeah.
It's almost like you just gotta slum it so hard, and then you get on a sitcom, and then you do an arena tour, and you better have the chops at that point. You do one arena tour before you're ready, you suck, the reviews come out, your career's over.
Yeah.
It's such a fucking shitty fucking...
I think I'd miss like the 5 people audience. You ever thought about that? That you'd miss like the shitty rooms?
I don't think it's ever gonna stop. Cause even if you put out an album and you got all that shit going, you gotta try out your stuff at open mics before you kinda take it to a club. I don't know. Unless you're at a certain level.
Yeah, a certain level where you get like the product placement people in there.
Yeah.
Where you have like one old guy, one black guy, a Hispanic lady, and
the cute Jew girl.
Yeah, you like have the little test things where they hit the button, yes or no.
Whoa,
that's the future.
Sounds awful.
It is.
Everyone's gonna be taking selfies instead. Be like, does this rating button take selfies? The awnies. Everyone's retarded these days.
Yeah. But how do you think my comedy is? How would you rate me in the comedy scene?
Well, I think you are still pretty green, you know? You've been doing it, what, 2 years?
6.
6?
Almost 6.
Whoa. Well...
Not consistently, though.
Yeah, that's the thing. If you do it 1 year, like, once a month, versus someone who's doing it...
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Or 5 times a week or 6 times a week. I don't know.
See, I told you I had some hard questions for you.
I don't know. I just like when I see you get better. What worries me about your comedy is when you just keep doing the same jokes again. Then I'm like, oh, you're not getting better. Maybe you're working on your timing. But you got to still feel that like nervous feeling over and over again of, oh, I don't know if this new joke or blah, blah, blah. And then, write it, work it out, try it, write it, work it out, try it. It's an interesting process. It never ends. Because even, like, when I get a bit where I'm like, oh, this bit's good, and it kills one night, I won't feel it enough, maybe, or
yeah.
I'll just change one little wording around another time, and it falls on its face, and you have to have a really strong sense of your comedic voice and sense of what you want to do to make it consistent, you know?
Yeah. Because I do try to end with a really good one. Especially if a set goes bad. You know, just to kind of...
Yeah, get a little pop at the end.
Yeah. But I have been working... I just am a perfectionist. So like, when you're like, oh, that joke's good, I'm like, no, there's not every line is perfect.
Yeah, know? But I think it's also like screenwriting, you know. If I'm banging my head against the wall, I'm like, I can't get this screenplay to work.
Mm-hmm.
The only thing you can really do is start a new one, finish a new one, come back to that one.
Yeah.
Because you're going to keep having the same problem. Hi, Fonzie. We're doing a podcast, bud. All
right, I'm sorry for interrupting your podcast. Miguel.
One of my favorite memories of Fonzie.
It's his podcast. Don't talk about me. Just come and say hello. I love the idea of the roast, and I want to be on it.
All right, we'll talk. I'll have my people call your people.
Hey, have your people call Miguel. Call my people.
Right. Well, this actually is a funny story. Is I got put on dead last second to last at the Howlin' Wolf, and there was one guy in the audience that wasn't a comedian. And I was just so bitter that, like, my set was... You know my set's very go-lucky, happy?
Yeah.
But my set was, like, so bitter. And, like, this dude laughed so hard. Because I was just like, Brian. And I was like, what's your name? And he's like, Brian. I was like, Brian, you're the only one in this show. Because fuck these people. And then I told the joke, and Fonzie goes, aha. I said, fuck you, Fonzie. You
came in. It's just you're being honest. It's yeah. like it's like the whole thing of the fourth wall dissolves. And it's like, obviously this sucks. Obviously I'm struggling up here. When you have, like, layers of pretension where you're like, just let the show must go on, pretend, you know, whatever. That's why doing a play is just the... Doing a play seems torturous to me. Because you do it, it's fun, the first, like, three times you perform a play. Then you gotta do it 50 more times.
And you gotta practice.
And you gotta practice.
Months.
Yeah, you might have it down to a point where you just do... You know, if you're performing the same play a couple times a week, you know, six times a week, you don't have to rehearse anymore. Yeah. But also, it's like... No matter what the audience does, no matter what happens, you can't comment on it.
No.
You're just like a jukebox with arms, and you just say the line, you turn. Every one of your movements has been yelled at by a director. Put your hand up here, then do this.
Yeah.
And it's just like, stand-up is kind of like that sometimes when you're on a roll, when you're doing bits, but in between, if anything happens, you can always abandon everything, address what's happening. Go back, do your jokes, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah. And also, too, I feel like with plays, because I used to do a lot of plays at college and high school, like, it's like that safety net. Like, if it's a sucky night, you're just like, ah, I didn't write that, ah, you know. But with comedy, it's just you.
Yeah, it's always your fault.
Yeah, no matter what, it's your fault. You know?
Yeah. But, man, as we're doing the show, I'm looking at the crowd in Siberia. It's, like, fucking packed in there.
I know.
And we were getting worried that, like, Comedy Central's in town. Comedy Central's in town filming a bunch of people's half-hour specials at the Civic Theater. And then they came here to, like, you know, see if there's any other comics around. Which is kind of interesting. So.
Well, maybe I should do my good stuff.
Yeah, do your A material. I'm not going to hold it against you, like, tonight. Just fucking go up there.
I don't know. I'm trying to get my cat age joke because I'm in the Rivertown. And I have, like, a play reference, and they do a lot of plays.
Mm-hmm.
Have you heard my Cat AIDS one?
The feline AIDS. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
And there's something about condoms in there.
Yeah, it's been doing really well. I think when people understand what Cat AIDS is...
that it's not something that you're making up. It's, like, a different kind of AIDS.
Yeah. And so I might try that tonight. I don't know. Sometimes I just kind of...
Now, if a lesbian cat has feline AIDS, could she possibly give it to another?
If they're very rough and they like fighting.
If they really like scissor aggressively and they start bleeding their cooters against each other?
Yes.
Now, do gay cats suck each other's dicks? Because also, a cat dick has thorns. So, I mean, if a gay cat is fucking another guy cat in the ass with its thorn dick, that's gonna be, I mean, you wanna talk about moaning under the shrubs.
I don't think animals suck each other's dick, except dolphins.
Well, the blowholes.
Yeah, dolphins are one of the only ones that do oral sex. It's a fun fact.
I guess no penguin. Nothing with a beak can...
Yeah, of course, no. No, you can't do that.
It's like making love to a nutcracker.
Yeah, and plus, too, they don't have the saliva, so it's just like...
Just a dry, dead tongue and a fucking scissor.
Looks like something they try to kill Bond in. Like, no, Bond, I don't want you to talk. I want you to come.
Even a cat's tongue is like sandpaper. So even if it's just like licking the other
cat's
gay balls.
Well, they can lick their own stuff. So why even go out?
Yeah, that's true.
You know? But I think it's the thrill of the hunt. I think it's the thrill of the hunt, you know?
My sister's cat is like such a foot fetishist. Whenever you have like, you're just sitting on the couch, it'll just like rub its face on your feet. Just like, fuck yeah. Like if your feet are in socks, it'll just be like, yeah. Even if you take your shoes off and your shoes are still warm, it'll just like put its whole face
in
your shoes.
And you have a foot fetish too and a cat fetish, so kind of...
Apple doesn't fall far from the tree, my friend. All right, Corey's going to start the show.
All right.
We're going to take a little break.
How y'all doing, Siberia? Woo! I'm glad y'all still waiting for me. Who's got work tomorrow? Huh? Hell y'all. I like it. Except you, man. Thank you for saying that. But let's give it up. Let's give it up for the beautiful ladies in the room. Give it up. you look into her eyes and you say, as long as you live, I will love you. Until that point, I gotta move on. I can't be tied down. And so I got up, and this beautiful woman grabbed my ass. And she said, you don't got an ass, Richard. And I said, calm down, Grandma, it's Easter, all right?
Okay, Dr. Dubas.
We just got back from a very frustrating list lineup.
That's how it always goes, you know? It's like, you show up to an open mic, you're at the mercy of the host. You know, so they might put other people up. Looks like this homeless gentleman is trying to go up to the window.
I was like, is this the opposite of a drive-thru?
Yeah. The homeless guy just puts a scooter up to you, and instead of giving you burgers, he just asks for shit.
Don't disappoint dad. He's like, all right. Next minute, come to the stage, please make some noise. I'll do something, let him know you're listening. But Mr. Eric Hollerbach.
Another episode of Highway Motherfucking Diary in the bag. Give it up for Paul Joseph and Richard Dubas.
Check it out.
That's we're done. Later.